Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm Kat Bailey, and joining me today is Bob Mackey.
Howdy ho, everybody.
And also joining the podcast for the first time is Polygon's Phil Kohler.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Wow, so big week, Bloodborne is officially out. This podcast will be entirely about Bloodborne. We'll be breaking it down in a lot of details. We'll be including user feedback, so let's get started right now. So the first thing I want to say is I am completely blown away by the response that Bloodborne has gotten. I mean, I shouldn't be surprised that given the kind of love that has been shown Dark Souls for quite a while now, but I just want to rewind time really quickly to, I'd say, 2010, or it was either 2009 or 2010 when Demon's Souls originally came out. And I hate being a kind of a Souls game hipster, but I was very much on board with that game right away. But I remember that nobody wanted to review it. Ray Barnhold over at 1UP was the only one who showed any interest in it. I just randomly took it home one day and went, wow, this is actually really good. I really love the combat. It feels terrific. But when I talked to other journalists about it and other reviewers, they were like, it's buggy and it's really, really hard and I just don't understand this game. So I figured that it was consigned to forever be a niche game.
You know, Kat, I was right there with you. I was over, it was 2009. I remember because I had just started at Game Informer. It was, as you say, nobody wanted to review it. I think there was one editor at Game Informer who had done a preview of it using a near-complete build and thought it was complete trash. But I was kind of an Atlus fanboy, so I was like, I'll give it a shot. You know, what's the worst that could happen? And ended up taking it home and completely falling in love with it. I think I gave it a 9, and everybody at Game Informer was like, thought I was crazy. They thought it was complete nonsense.
Yeah, Ray Barnhold ended up giving it an A. And not to pile on our friends who did, gosh, what was the name of the video show back in the day? Area 5. But they really hated that show. So there's a video out there, or a game, that game. So there's a video out there somewhere where we are heatedly arguing over the Souls games. And now they're practically beyond reproach. It's fascinating. And everybody is playing Bloodborne. Bob, what was your? How did you get into the Souls game? I'm out of curiosity.
I do want to say before we go on that I think the more things change, the more they stay the same, because I still see the same. I mean, like, people that kind of know what a Souls game is now and what to expect, but I still see the same critical commentary from some people that I saw with Demon's Souls and Dark Souls. So I guess not everybody gets it yet.
Well, it's still very much it's still very much a series where either this is something that you're into or it's not, and I feel like I see a lot of people who, where it's not something they're into, it's not as simple as, because the people who are into it love it so much, I feel like people get defensive about it, and about why they don't like it. So I see a lot of, both people who write about video games, but also just general gamers, like on Twitter and such, who, if this isn't their type of game, they get really angry about why it's not their type of game.
Yeah. It's like, I was telling Kat, they find the idea preposterous. Like, you would make me do this in a video game? How dare you, sir? Good day. Yeah. That's kind of the attitude I see. But, you know, these games aren't for everybody, and that's why it's hard to write an all-purpose review, because you have to be a certain kind of person to enjoy them. Not saying you have to be, smart or a better person or a better gamer, whatever that means, but it is made for a certain kind of mindset and a certain kind of level of patience not a lot of people have.
I think we can. Yeah. I think we can all agree that if you don't like the people who like this game are better than the people who don't.
I think we can all. Oh, of course.
I'm just kidding. I'm just being a jerk.
Aww. So I am curious though, Bob. How did you get into the Souls games?
Well, I was kind of a late adopter of the PS3 because it was pretty much doom and gloom from the beginning with that system until about the midway point. So I eventually picked up a PS3 in 2010, and then I started working at Atlas, and Company Secrets, they would occasionally sell, you know, workers their games at a discount price, and so that's where I got Demon's Souls, and I kind of bashed my head against it, and I really liked it, although it took me maybe 30 hours to understand how summoning worked. I didn't actually go onto message boards and wikis and watch videos like I should have, so it was just me and this game for maybe like a year, back and forth until I finally finished it, and that's when all of the Dark Souls hype was ramping up, and I was immediately on board with Dark Souls. And since then, I've reviewed every Souls game, including Bloodborne, so which I'll be finishing my review. It will have been finished by the time this episode goes out.
Yeah, the thing that I've always found amazing about the Dark Souls games, aside from the pack, I've always found that the emphasis on the difficulty is perhaps a little overstated because, frankly, you can kind of brute force those games by having people come in through multiplayer. I've argued in the past that Dark Souls is my personal game of the previous generation because of the way that it handled multiplayer, the way that it kind of changed action games for the better, in the way that it moved away from fast and kinetic to slow, deliberate, impactful, the brilliance of its boss battles and things like that. It is a wonderfully designed game. So, moving on to Bloodborne. Bloodborne is kind of had an interesting pathway. I remember back in 2009 or 2010 having played Demon's Souls and hearing in the background that there was a rather large battle going on for the rights between multiple publishers. And one side, and whoever won would get to publish the sequel to Demon's Souls. And that ended up being Bandai Namco, and they did not get to retain the rights and ended up creating Dark Souls. And the assumption was for a long time that there would be a Demon's Souls 2 from Sony, because Sony was the original publisher of Demon's Souls, and instead, the original creator of Demon's Souls came out and created something entirely new, which is Bloodborne, which one user on Twitter asked, best 3D Castlevania? Well, is it? Is it the best 3D Castlevania, guys?
It's spooky enough, I'll give it that.
Yeah. You can start with a whip, so that's important.
It is probably the path Castlevania maybe should have taken but didn't. I can see it being compared to Castlevania, I mean it plays much different, but if you're looking for that kind of experience, this is pretty much it. Without the kind of Castlevania goofiness you usually get, it's pretty dark.
Yeah, I mean even, you know, Dark Souls had been compared to Castlevania by some people as well. But I think this one, it comes across more clearly because it is actually you know, it has that, it shares that gothic horror style. And it, you can start the game with a whip.
Yeah, it's funny because if you look back at the original Castlevania, I mean, certainly, it wasn't what you would call a slow paced game, but it was definitely deliberate compared to other action platformers, say like Ninja Gaiden. So it seems appropriate that a game like Bloodborne, which is very much based on the Souls series, which are themselves very deliberate action games, would be compared to Castlevania.
Of course, one of the things that's really interesting about Bloodborne in comparison to the Souls series is, you know, again, obviously it's still very deliberate, it's still very much building off that same style of combat, but it is a little bit more action-heavy, it is a little bit more, I would say, heavily encourages players to be a little bit more aggressive.
So let's segue into actually the differences between Bloodborne and the Souls series. So one of the big ones that has been commented on, no shields.
Uh-huh. So that is true.
Does it work? Does it not work?
Actually, you can get a shield.
That's right, yeah, actually.
But it's like a joke shield.
I forgot about that. It's like a bunch of rotting planks like strung together.
It's basically like the designers saying, like, oh, you miss your shield? Here, take this. You can have your shield. But yeah, it is the no shield thing is for a player like me who in the Souls games, you know, my build was always very much about turtling up behind a shield. It's a little terrifying, a little bit intimidating.
You and everybody else, though. I had a shield, but I would also like roll around a whole lot. So, is Bloodborne mostly rolling around?
Oh yeah! In fact, they alter the dodging system where you roll normally when you're, you know, using the roll button outside of combat, but when you're locked onto someone, you do these weird like side steps that are more combat friendly. So, it is really a lot about dodging. But even if you don't have a shield, if an enemy hits you and you hit them back within a certain window of time, you'll get that health back. So, the game really encourages you to take big risks, like risks you normally would not take in a Souls game.
Yeah, another big part of that is the Estus Flask system, which was one of the big things that Dark Souls in particular was known for. You know, you had a certain number of potions that you would start with every time you died, and part of the game was trying to use those potions at the right time. That system is gone. And that health regain system where you get hit, but then you can regain it by attacking within a certain window of time is kind of like the replacement for that. It's kind of like you don't get this set number of potions every time, but whenever you get hit, you have a certain window to keep that health.
Bob, in your review, you use a word that a lot of RPG fans dread to hear. You use the word streamline.
Uh-oh.
Yes, use that word. Bloodborne has been streamlined in comparison to other Souls games. You take note of the fact that the 9 character attributes from Dark Souls 2 have been reduced to 6.
That's true,
and
yeah.
Equipment burden gone entirely. Yep. This game is for filthy casuals now.
It's for filthy action game fans, and I wash my hands of it. No, it really is objectively speaking, it is a less complex game than any Souls game. You can't play it as varied as you could with the Souls game. In fact, really, the game emphasizes like in-your-face melee combat, no matter what weapon you're using. There's no, there is magic of a certain kind, but it's not super useful. And your long-range attacks are kind of just used to stun enemies instead of kill them. So, if you're looking for like, I'm going to play as a sorcerer, I'm going to play as an archer, I'm going to play as this, there's really only one way to play Bloodborne, and that's just hacking things to death in their face.
Phil.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. I would almost go so far as to say, though, you can... I feel like a hardcore Souls fan who hasn't played Bloodborne might hear that and be really scared. And certainly I was kind of hearing those impressions early on. But the more that I play, I would almost say, like, not even streamlined necessarily, but, like, it's a more focused game. It's like they chose that one play style, and we're like, let's focus on this one play style and just get that perfect. Let's get it feeling as good as it has ever felt. So even as somebody who didn't, like, that was not my play style in the Souls games, I'm finding myself really getting into it and really appreciating it. I miss the variety, and I look forward to playing the Dark Souls 2 re-release or Dark Souls 3 or whatever, whenever that comes out. But I kind of like the fact that they really separated themselves and were like, we're going to do something different here. And that is just focusing in on this one type.
You know, when I played Dark Souls, when I played the original Dark Souls, I haven't spent as much time with Dark Souls 2 as I would have liked. I remember magic was definitely unbalanced early on. A lot of succeeding in that game was kind of finding your class niche and being able to grow from within that, like whatever you're comfortable with when it comes to weapons. Is there a similar sense of that going on in Bloodborne?
I would say not really. As Bob said, pretty much all of the game comes down to in-your-face melee combat, so it's like it's really this one style that you have to get used to. Obviously, there are different weapons, and those weapons feel different. They've introduced a really cool system called trick weapons, which is most of the weapons in the game now. You can tap the L1 button, which would have been used for blocking before, and it changes the weapon into a different form. So as an example, like, you can start the game with this cane that's like really short range, really fast attacks. If you tap L1, it turns into a whip, and then it's really sort of longer range and more like AoE attacks. So there are different, like, there's slightly different variations on style within those weapon types, but, you know, there's not, like, your classes that you're starting, I think you call it an origin story in this, not even a class. Your starting origin really is just determining these basic stat things, even greater than in previous, than in the Souls games. You're not even, like, changing your equipment when you start.
You know, this has been kind of a running meme throughout the first few episodes of Acts of the Blood God, and I hate returning to it, but can we dispense with the notion that Dark Souls and, by extension, Bloodborne is not an RPG? Because
people saying this?
I have heard people legitimately say that the Souls games and also, and therefore, by extension, Bloodborne is not an RPG, which is absolutely crazy to me because, I mean, half the game is sitting there figuring out how to properly equip your character, improve that character's love, figure out which stats to improve, using the items at the right time, just because it's an action game. I mean, it's a friggin' dungeon crawler in the greatest traditions, right? Anyway, let us dispense with that. Bloodborne is an RPG. Phil, I was looking at your Twitter feed, and you were dishing some hot takes, and I want to share them right here.
Sure.
You said, whoa, where I felt like Dark Souls 2 was a refined and a really good intro to the series, Bloodborne feels like a step back in the area. It's super difficult right off the bat, heavily obscured new mechanics, etc. And of course, you also added that it's really rad so far.
Yeah, no.
Do you stand by that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. When I posted that, I actually got varied responses, which is about half the people responding completely agreed with me, and the other half were like, I found this to be a much easier intro into the style of game than Dark Souls. Hmm. And it kind of that really threw me for a loop. But in my opinion, I loved Dark Souls 2, and, you know, I know some Souls fans didn't like Dark Souls 2 quite as much. But in my opinion, one of the things that was really cool and interesting about Dark Souls 2 is the tutorial felt much smarter and better thought out, and it just felt like a softer, gentler intro to what this type of game is, and not in a way that I felt took away from the difficulty overall of the game, but just it made it easier for somebody who is completely new to the Souls series to understand what was cool about it and get invested. But there definitely seems to be some debate about that. Some people feel differently. Some people feel like Bloodborne is better at that. The thing that made me say that, I guess, is that Bloodborne's first area that you have to fight through is really long, really difficult, and you do not have the option to level up until you get to the boss.
Yeah, and that way it's identical to Demon's Souls.
Yes. Yes, it is. And although even, well, I guess it's been a long time since I played Demon's Souls, so I don't want to say, like,
that's cool. You do have to beat that first boss before you,
yes,
unlock level ups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think that level is as long as Yharnam is.
It's not as long. And also, the big thing about Central Yharnam here is there's just these huge groups of patrolling enemies going back and forth along this strip. And I feel like, once you get used to it, they're not that hard to take down. It's not that hard to be patient and figure out what they're doing. But for someone going into it for the first time, or even somebody coming over from the Souls games, it's a very different feeling. You know, you have to learn how to properly approach these guys.
You know, I'm glad that you guys referenced Demon's Souls. People are saying that this is the spiritual successor to Demon's Souls. Is that fair to say?
Oh, for sure. Like, I definitely think so in terms of tone specifically. It is a much darker game. There, in Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2, there were moments of beauty and hope and humanity. In this game, there is none of that. Everything is on the way out. Things that you think you fixed quickly become undone. It's a very, very, like, unforgiving, cruel world that this game takes place in.
Yeah, and it also mechanically, I think, or structurally, rather, it does have the Dark Souls-style big open world, but then there is also a hub system. There's, like, an area you go back to level up and then kind of warp out of that feels very much like the hub in Demon's Souls.
So does Josh Anderson over on Twitter at Sketchlayer Josh ask, does the Demon's Souls-esque hub world lead to a more guided experience? I found Dark Souls a bit aimless compared to Demon's Souls.
This is probably a good question for Bob, who's played a lot more of the game than me. I have not completed Bloodborne and have much more to go at this point. But I will say from my time just in Central Yharnam, I would say it's not more guided necessarily, just because, like, at least in this first area that I've been working through and exploring, there are so many side paths. There are so many, like, hidden paths. There's shortcuts to open up. There's, like, I found myself in the sewers for a while, and I don't think I need to be there yet. I think it's just totally, like, an optional side area. It's certainly not just, like, the hub system is not mean, like, you're warping to an area, and then it's just a straight shot.
Bob?
Yes. Well, I mean, the person was saying that Dark Souls was a little aimless. Is that what the case was?
Yeah, he was saying that Dark Souls is, or Demon, he felt Dark Souls felt a little aimless and compared to the more guided experience of Demon's Souls.
Okay. Well, in that case, I don't think they're going to like Bloodborne very much, because while the game gives you, it gives you direct information more than Dark Souls ever did. Like, some notes will be like, oh, go here, you should go here next, in its own way, but in many cases, I would beat a boss and be like, I have no idea where to go next. And in some cases, I missed an entire area just because I missed a door or I missed a staircase. And some areas you get into through really unorthodox means, and I don't want to spoil anything, but the way you'll access some areas is not through a door or a portal. It's through some strange circumstances that, like I said, I will not spoil them, but I can't wait for people to talk about it when they figure it out themselves.
Even in the first area, the way that you get to the first shortcut, which makes the journey from the first lanterns, not bonfires in this, they're lanterns. The journey from the first lantern to the first boss is like a 20-minute trek. And the way that you open a shortcut that makes it like a 5-minute trek is you need to get to that area by like going through some boxes and then jumping down to a lower level. And it's something that I completely missed the first 3, 4, 5 times that I went through that zone, and then kind of found by accident later. So, even in that sense, it's like the shortcuts themselves can be obscured. Like, you definitely need to explore, and there's a lot of side paths.
At Discord Count wants to know, how does the gameplay feel using guns? Because guns are definitely a thing in Bloodborne now.
Well, guns are not really weapons, as I pointed out in the review, and I think we talked about it a little on here, maybe. Guns are not, you're not going to be sniping people with guns, you're not going to be rolling up with your machine gun or your cannon or whatever, though there are some more powerful weapons, but essentially guns are just used to assist you with these things called visceral attacks, where if you fire a gun before an enemy attack connects, they will become stunned, and you can do this super powerful, really great-looking move where you essentially rip out their heart, I'm pretty sure. But it is really fun to do, and when you get the timing down, it's so satisfying. So
It's basically the replacement for the Souls parry system. So it operates the way that a parry would work in Souls, where you knock away an enemy's weapon as they're attacking with your shield, and then you get to do like a super powerful counterattack. I think I had like a snarky tweet last night about how this game basically feels like the director of Dark Souls was like, hey, I heard that you never really learned how to parry correctly, and then just made a whole game that's entirely based around that.
It feels a lot more natural, though. I feel like they gave up on that parry riposte system in Dark Souls 2, because I don't think there are even tutorial messages about it, but you can still do it.
Yeah.
And in Demon's and Dark Souls, they were like, oh, here's how you do this really simple thing that you'll rely on. But I was always so bad at it. But I'm much better at this this stun mechanic. I don't know why.
The timing window seems less harsh than it ever was.
Yeah, that
and,
could be
and,
it.
And maybe there's just something about the fact that mentally, too, like, you're shooting them, so it feels like you're also hurting them, even though you're not doing a lot of damage.
Yeah, and, like, swinging a shield to intercept something that's also swinging at you it can be really tricky, because there's a lot of weird timing that I don't think just firing a gun it involves. You're just hitting a button and, you know, that's it.
No, I do agree with you, though. I was bad at parrying, and I feel like as scared of this new system as I was, it's really been gelling for me.
I'm still mourning the inability to blow off an opponent's head with a hand cannon. Real miss opportunity sure. there, Bloodborne. Sure. For sure. So let's talk about the bosses really quickly. I've always found that the bosses are kind of a hallmark of, you know, what the Souls games are. They're usually big, memorable, terrifying, really strong. They are the challenges that you have to overcome to be able to advance. How are the bosses in Bloodborne?
I will say, again, not being super far into the game, not having faced a ton of the bosses, but I know a lot of people who were disappointed with Dark Souls 2, one of their primary complaints, and again, this is coming from somebody, I love Dark Souls 2, but for the people who didn't love it, one of the primary complaints was that a lot of people felt that the bosses were a little too samey. It was repeats of bosses from Dark Souls 1, or a lot of bosses who are just like big, fast, powerful human type characters rather than, you know, the more interesting monstrosities that Dark Souls 1 and Demon's Souls had. I think those players will not be disappointed in Bloodborne. Like the bosses here are some creepy, disgusting, scary looking creatures.
Yeah, they are huge and powerful. There are a few, like, quote-unquote dual bosses where you're just fighting another human, and sometimes those can be even harder just because of how fast the human opponents can be, but I really enjoyed the bosses, and in fact, I've had to take on a number of them by myself because of the pre-release, how no one was online playing, and also how there's some weird server issues or connectivity issues or something that's not being very helpful in terms of co-op, but I've had to take on a number of them myself, and it's doable, but I really wish the camera was better for some of the bosses.
Bob just nailed why I will never review a Souls game / Bloodborne game again. Because, oh my god, not having that crutch available when you're under the gun for a review deadline is one of the most frustrating things ever.
Yes, it is. I think Bob's 100% right on the camera issue. And this is something that I think the Souls games ran into too. In particular, when it's a boss that's really big, like five times bigger than you are, and one of the main strategies with those big bosses is always going to be, you know, running under it, like rolling under its legs. And the camera, they have not fixed the issue where the camera tends to kind of freak out. At this point, I feel like they've kind of said, like, it's just become part of the strategy for those bosses. It's like, part of learning how to defeat those bosses is accepting, like, okay, lock-ons is not going to work here.
So, let's just continue right on into multiplayer. One of the things that always... So, my theory as to why Dark Souls has become as popular as it is, aside from the fact that it is a really, really good game, is that it was perfectly positioned to take advantage of the rise of streaming culture and YouTube culture. There is a thriving community surrounding the Souls games on YouTube. A lot of people enjoy doing speed runs. They enjoy mastering the game and putting that on YouTube. And there's, interestingly enough, a thriving PvP community with people who just enjoy going into games, fighting one another. Which is interesting because it's mostly randomized. Is Bloodborne kind of like positioned to further take advantage of that? I suppose the first question I got to ask is, how is the multiplayer different in Bloodborne?
The biggest difference that I know of, so they've introduced this, and Bob can almost certainly speak a little bit more to how this functions, but they've introduced something called the Chalice Dungeon System. which is actually a randomized dungeon that you can create. And my understanding is that these dungeons are meant to be played co-op, and you can get matched up with people randomly, but my understanding is that you can actually create a chalice dungeon and put on a password and give that password to your friends and specifically team up with your friends, which is a massive change from the Souls games of past. Like, people have created workarounds with previous Souls games to make sure that you're teaming up with your friends, but it has never been something that the game has actually really encouraged or put in any tools to allow that to happen.
I mean, part of the appeal of the Souls games was that even though there were ghosts around you, mm-hmm. You felt like you're in a connected world. You also felt totally alone.
Yeah.
That you would run into a stranger and it would be almost like two ships passing in the night. Oh, look, here's this person. I don't know who they are. They're faceless. Oh, they're trying to kill me. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing that they effectively put in co-op.
I mean, it's specifically for this one type, right? This one mm-hmm. area of the game, but it feels to me like a very big change.
It feels like they're a little like they're trying to have Ether Cake and have it. God, how do you put?
Sure, yeah.
It that. Feels like they're trying to have it both ways. I should say.
There you go.
Yeah, I did it. They want to be able to retain the atmosphere, but they also want to be able to shut up all the people who've been complaining about the lack of co-op over the years, fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, in Dark Souls 2, there's an item you use, basically, where you select the god you're worshipping, and then you have your friends select the same one out of a list of, like, 12, and that will help you do multiplayer. And in fact, I played through most of Dark Souls 2 DLC with my friends. It's doable. And the password system also extends to the game as well. I was doing co-op with somebody in the main game, and I died, and I was like, that's the end of that. But then he messaged me through PSN and was like, hey, here's a password, put it in, let's try it again. And I did it, and we jumped back into the game and beat the boss. But apparently, I read online, you need PS Plus to receive messages? Is that true? Does anyone know?
I have no clue.
That's just something I've heard in a Dark Souls thread I'm reading. Like, you need a PS Plus subscription to send messages. I don't know. I can't verify that.
It's crazy to me that somebody would own a PlayStation 4 and not have PS Plus, since you're missing out on, like, a ton of really, like, free games and also multiplayer, but that's an entire... But I suppose there are people who don't have PS Plus and might run into that issue. I am curious to know if that is, in fact, a problem. But otherwise, Bloodborne is pretty much the same as the other Souls games in terms of the way the... summoning people and the PvP works.
Yeah, I will say that, and I think Bob mentioned this already a little bit, but it seems like there have been some server issues at launch, which I don't remember really happening with the previous Souls games, and I feel like it's become like the cliche of this generation of like, a game launched with online problems, but. Just as an example, like even the, you know, one of the things the Souls games have always had are those you know, blood puddles that you can select them and watch how someone died in that area. Those for the first day or two were functioning very sporadically for me. Like I would see them and I would select them, but the ghost that's showing how they died would not show up. So it feels like there's some weird server online issues going on.
Yeah, I really hope it's temporary. I hope it's not just how the game is designed. It'll take people months to figure out like the actual math that goes into summoning and who is summoned and who isn't and how it works, because plenty of people have done that with Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2. But and when Dark Souls 2 came out, I remember distinctly, like, as soon as I put down a summon sign, I was like out of the game and in someone else's. It was like almost instantaneous. But I've been playing Bloodborne a lot and trying to finish it for review, and there are times where I would ring my bell, my summoning bell, which is how you pull people into the world. I'd ring it in front of a boss gate, and I'd be waiting like 25 minutes, and it's like, there has to be someone else who wants to help me fight this boss. It's like, it's mathematically impossible for that not to happen, so why is it not pulling anyone into my game? So it's been a little frustrating, because I really want to do multiplayer. The times I've been able to do it have been a lot of fun.
Server issues. What a shock. tell me about a game that doesn't have server issues at launch.
Yeah, like I said, I hope it is temporary. I hope they're not secretly working with like a peer-to-peer system like in Dark Souls. I hope it's like legitimately a single server. I don't know. I haven't looked into that, but I don't.
The problem is if it's the problem that it is like, you know, if it's a single server, but it's one of Sony's servers.
Yeah,
we've seen how those work in games like Drive Club. Like,
oh God, yeah.
I don't know. Either way, hopefully it improves. It's not like a total disaster.
No.
It just seems to have issues on and off.
Is it wrong that I'm disappointed there's no PC version?
It is not wrong to be disappointed in that. It is, in fact, completely right to be disappointed in that. I've had a lot of people asking me on Twitter, like, hey, do you think a PC version could happen? And, you know, I want to believe, but it seems so unlikely with Sony publishing it.
I would say it's not going to happen. There's going to be no PC
version. If it were a Microsoft exclusive, I would be like, yeah, you know, Microsoft eventually, a lot of times they like, eventually are like, all right, whatever, put it on PC. But it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen with Sony.
One reason I would love a PC version of this game, because, you know, it's never going to happen, but I assume it would get rid of some of the horrendous load times I've experienced with this game, which have been pretty rough for a Souls-type experience. And I'm really spoiled. I'm really spoiled by playing Dark Souls 2 and Dark Souls 1 on the PC, where when I die, it's maybe 3 or 4 seconds, and then bam, the game is back. With Bloodborne, it's like, oh, I die. Time to get out my phone or, like, pick up a book or something, because I'm going to be here a while at that logo.
Yeah, even Dark Souls 1 and 2, like, on consoles, on last-gen consoles, the load times were rough, but it was, like, what, maybe 15, 20 seconds? I feel like there are times with Bloodborne where it can get up to, like, 45, 50, maybe even a minute at times, and, like, that's crazy. It's
really
crazy.
Yeah, I've had some pretty rough, yeah.
Does it have the same frame rate issues that Dark Souls had on console?
I would say not as bad as Dark Souls 1 and 2, especially Dark Souls 1. But certainly Bloodborne is not running at a solid 60 frames per second. There are moments where the game gets very, like, very framey, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I think, like, whoever does all the looks into all the frame rates and stuff has verified it is a 30 FPS game with some weird technical tricks going on, but in co-op at least it does, the frame rate does dip pretty high when you are playing with one or even two other people. It can get like into the, not the single digits, but close to maybe like 12, 15, 20, you know, it doesn't look very pretty.
It's definitely, you know, it's definitely a case where I think one of the biggest disappointments, technically speaking, with this game, it's just that it's a very good-looking game. It looks pretty, but you can tell it's running on the exact same engine that Demon's Souls was running on. And
Demon's Souls or Dark Souls?
Demon's Souls. I mean, Dark Souls was also running on that engine, I think. Like, you can tell, like, the framework at the very bottom level goes all the way back to that, and I'm sure they've upgraded it lots. I'm sure they've implemented lots of new tools and tricks to make it super pretty and to make it run a little bit better. But, you know, there's got to, like, in the back of my mind, I've got to wonder, like, when are they just going to bite the bullet, so to speak, and have an entirely new engine, entirely new back end running this series? Because I've got to feel like that's holding them back.
Knowing from software, never.
Never, yeah, no. You know, honestly, if we really, like, dug into it, it's like, oh, it turns out Demon's Souls itself is running on the King's Quest 1 engine.
they just keep adding to it.
Yeah.
You mean Kingsfield?
Sorry, Kingsfield, not King's Quest.
Sorry, I don't mean to be pedantic.
No, that was a silly mistake.
I knew it.
Is there an equivalent of Blighttown in Bloodborne?
There's an area with a swamp, but it's not like all swamp, so not really. There, I don't think there's really a Blight Town to speak of.
And what's the death penalty like in Bloodborne? If you can't tell, I haven't played Bloodborne, so I'm being the audience surrogate for this episode. I really want to play it, but I'm kind of in the middle of Xenoblade Chronicles and Pillars of Eternity, which is one of the curses of being a games journalist. You can play all of the games, but sometimes there just aren't enough hours in the day.
Those are both short games. You can probably just knock those out.
I know, right? Exactly. So I don't remember what question that I was asking.
Blighttown?
Death penalty. Yeah. Death penalty.
Oh, death penalty.
Death penalty, yeah.
Yeah, the death penalty is you know, going to be very familiar to anyone who's played the previous games. It's basically you drop your they're not souls, they're blood echoes in this game.
Very different.
Yeah, extremely different. So all the experience points that you've piled up, you drop them wherever you died. One interesting tweak on this is certain if like a regular enemy kills you, instead of dropping your blood echoes in a pile, they'll be dropped, like they'll be absorbed by that enemy, and you'll see when you return that area, the enemy will have kind of glowing eyes. That's the sign, like, this is the enemy who has your blood echoes. And in order to get them back, you actually have to kill that enemy rather than just running up and touching the part. Thankfully, that does not seem to be the case with bosses, in my experience so far. So
that would be
that has not happened yet. No,
yeah,
that would be such a Souls thing to happen.
I know, I totally expected it, but so far, every time that I've died at a boss, when I go back to the boss, my blood echoes are just in a pile there, and I can quickly run in and grab them before the boss kills me yet again.
Now, Kat, you asked about penalties, and this game actually has fewer penalties for death than a Souls game. Because if you remember in Souls, you're either like hollowed or living or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, dying when you're living makes you hollowed. In order to become human again, you need to beat a boss or use humanity or whatever. In this game, you're always alive even when you die, so there's no living dead state to worry about that restricts co-op. You're always alive, so.
Yeah, okay. So here's another question that I've kind of got to ask, and I think it's pertinent now. I like the Souls games a lot. Dark Souls was my game of the year when it came out. Demon's Souls was probably also my game of the year, though I don't remember too well. It's been 6 years since we've kind of started approaching that formula. Have we reached the point where that kind of Souls game approach has lost some of its novelty?
I would say, and this is again going back to that discussion of what's different with Bloodborne, I would say Bloodborne is very actively fighting against that in the sense of, like I said, focusing in on this one type of gameplay and getting it really right and making it so that it does feel distinct, both in setting and tone and in the type of gameplay. It feels distinct from Dark Souls. The other thing that I would say, though, is there is some concern with the fact that clearly now From Software has two teams that are working on games on and off. So, you know, if whatever the next Souls game is, the Dark Souls 3 or whatever it might be, if that's coming and it's coming, like, next year, that could start. If this ends up being like a Call of Duty situation where there is a new Souls-type game from Software every year on and off from like the different teams, I feel like it could start getting to be overkill. Like even just the fact that Bloodborne just came out and now the next-gen re-release of Dark Souls 2 is like 3 weeks away.
This is Bandai Namco.
Yeah. I know. And that's the thing is like I think Bandai Namco is going to keep pushing From to be like, yeah, Dark Souls 3, let's go. We're ready.
This point, it's probably their most profitable video game franchise.
Absolutely.
Which is crazy.
It's crazy. All they've got is that and Dragon Ball games. So,
that's not true. They got Gundam.
All they've got is that and Dragon Ball games.
And they're just flying off the shelves.
But no, so it's yeah, I think there's concern still that this could happen in the future. I think Bloodborne is, on From Software's part, a very smart step in fighting against that by saying, look, we can create something that has the same feel, but at the same point also feels very distinct.
I just want to add, Phil, to your comment, Dark Souls / Bloodborne isn't even From Software's only franchise. They are still making Armored Core games.
Oh, I know,
as well.
I know. I'm just saying, like, clearly they've got, like, the two teams that are doing these types of games, and I suspect will continue doing as those two teams, you know?
At this point, I got to figure that they're pretty well funded between Sony and Bandai Namco,
yeah.
So there's that at least.
Certainly.
Bob, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I feel like we're incredibly spoiled now, Souls fans, because since Dark Souls 2 has come out about a year ago, we've had nothing but content, including Bloodborne, like Souls-type content. So in one way, I feel really spoiled. I don't want it to become annualized, but at the same time, no one else is really making this kind of game except for Lords of the Fallen, which was okay, but still, like, there's no other kind of experience like this, so I don't know if I could get tired of it. I could probably take a Souls game every year if they were of the quality they've been.
Yeah.
And I've liked every one. I know some people don't like Dark Souls 2, but it might be my favorite.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, actually.
Yeah,
we'll
it's
see how
weird.
Bloodborne shakes out, but Dark Souls 2 is my favorite right now.
Yeah, I've definitely played it the most.
Lords of the Fallen's interesting, too, because, like, I think that's the big question, right? So, like, when you talk about annualized stuff like Call of Duty, part of the problem with Call of Duty being annualized, problem, quote-unquote, but part of the reason that Call of Duty being annualized gets made fun of is because it's not just Call of Duty. It's you know, a dozen different imitators that are also coming out and flooding the market at the same time. It's a dozen different shooters that play exactly that same way. So the big question for me is, will we start seeing more games like Lords of the Fallen? I think they've already said they're doing a Lords of the Fallen sequel.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Will we start seeing more developers? You know, we've seen a lot of developers who are inspired by the Souls games in some way or another. But will we see more developers actively trying to make their version of a Souls game? Because that is where, you know, when the market starts getting flooded that way, that's where, like, I feel like fatigue could really start setting in. And in particular, like, you know, will we see anyone maybe one day do it as good or better than From?
You're seeing a lot of concepts from Dark Souls seeping into other games, mm-hmm. especially the combat. You're seeing action developers using Dark Souls as a shorthand for some of their concepts. Interestingly, Bob like was disagreeing with me when I was suggesting that it was a fairly influential game, and I guess it's true in the sense that we really haven't seen a ton of imitators. I mean, there's Lords of the Fallen and Salt and Sanctuary is coming out, but nothing to the extent of the absolute ridiculous number of military shooters that we've had.
I don't think you've seen a lot of like clones per se, but I think if you talk to developers, like, I think a lot of developers would tell you that it's one of the most influential games of the past generation, just in the sense that developers are playing it, loving it, and saying to themselves, how can I take some of this feeling and put it into my game? They're not necessarily saying, I want to make the same type of game. I think, honestly, a lot of developers are scared by the idea of making the same type of game because it's really difficult.
No, it's such a well-crafted experience.
But I think I do think you're seeing some developers just saying, like, you know, I'm going to take this concept of penalties when you die, or I'm going to take this concept of you know, just extremely difficult boss encounters, or, you know, like, it's they're taking bits and pieces rather than emulating the whole.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think most publishers would be afraid to make a Souls clone, although Bandai Namco certainly did, but they also published Dark Souls, so, you know, they're less afraid. But I still feel like that is kind of like an unpopular choice. Like, can we really do this? Do we want to make a game that's this difficult? Like, I feel like Souls and Bloodborne really have carved out that niche for themselves, and it's going to be hard for another game to do it directly. But I think Phil's right in that we're seeing the effects of people that are influenced by it, not necessarily making the same kind of games, but maybe making players giving less help to players, making players more self-reliant, things like that. I think in fits and starts, maybe, but we are not going to see a lot of Souls clones, I think, outside of the rare Lords of the Fallen and things like that.
Yeah, and the problem is, you know, I'm not a game developer, and I certainly don't want to ever say, like, oh, this is easy, but I my gut feeling is that, like, making, you know, a Call of Duty clone, making a military shooter is easier than making a clone of a, like, crazy 60 plus hour intertwined action RPG. And in particular, like, I feel like if you make, like, a mediocre military shooter, it's easier to, like, make some people still like it. But if you make, like, a mediocre game in this ilk, it's just going to be frustrating and make people angry.
People will go, not as good as Dark Souls, I hate it.
Yeah.
One other question I had, Am I wrong to feel like most of the Dark Souls community has coalesced around the PC versions? And if that's the case, will that hurt Bloodborne going forward, do you think?
Yeah, I do think there is something interesting about the fact that the Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 are on multiple platforms. So, you know, regardless of whether or not it's PC or not for the audience, and I think it's difficult to tell for sure, but those games were available to such a wider audience. I am curious to see how many people are willing to buy a PS4 just for Bloodborne. I don't know what that number actually is. I don't have a good sense for how niche the audience is and how much that audience is willing to spend money to get their fix.
Just by word of mouth, it feels like a lot of people.
It feels like it, yeah. Bloodborne. But it's also, you know, we're also in a bubble to some degree of people who really love Bloodborne. So yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily know for sure. It's definitely something that Sony is clearly gambling on.
The fact that there is no PC version will make it a little more difficult for the community to make content around the game, because, you know, having the PC version available made it so much easier to look at models, to like free up the camera, to do like cinematic things and editing. But you're very much locked down to what the PS4 can and can't do. So I feel like, if anything, we might see less content online for Bloodborne just because of the system it's on. It's the same case for Demon's Souls. There's much less Demon's Souls content just because it's a harder platform to work with in terms of making videos.
So the last question that I'm going to ask, and I suppose it's a two-part question. One, how do you think Bloodborne stands up to the Souls games? Do you guys like it? What are your final thoughts? And also, is it a good entry point to the series, or would you recommend playing one of the other Souls games first? What do you think, Bob?
Well, I'm really liking Bloodborne outside of the few technical problems like the multiplayer issues, the frame rate, the loading times. That's all annoying, but there's really nothing else I want to do even after playing it all week, so that really says something about the game, I think. But I don't know. People have been saying, like, I don't know if I'll like this. Should I get a PS4? Should I get this game? My suggestion was, like, Dark Souls is probably less than $10 now. Go out, get it, try that. If you like how Dark Souls plays, then you'll probably like Bloodborne. You'll most likely like Bloodborne, or you'll at least know what Bloodborne's trying to do. I mean, even Dark Souls 2, I think, might be a better place to start, and it might be a little more expensive, maybe like $20-$30, but still, it's a fantastic game. So if you're not really sure about, you know, if you're up to the Bloodborne's challenge, I would check out the other games on the cheap and see if you are you can dig what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I've had people very specifically saying, like, hey, I bought a PS4 recently, I want to try this style of game, should I get Bloodborne or should I get the Dark Souls 2 re-release next month? And as I said earlier, I kind of feel like Dark Souls 2 is a smoother introduction for somebody who's never played this type of game. So that's been kind of my recommendation. As far as whether or not I personally prefer Bloodborne over any of the previous games, I haven't played enough to say yet. Right now, Dark Souls 2 is still my fave, but we'll see. I'm really loving Bloodborne.
Dark Souls 1 was my favorite, and you can go on Steam right now and get the Prepare to Die edition for $20.
There you
go.
And
then start loading up mods and everything, and it works pretty well on most computers. So I think, out of all the games, Dark Souls is the best crafted, the most original. It's like they expended a lot of energy, creative energy, in making it work. And what I have played of Dark Souls 2 doesn't hold up as well. But, of course, I need to play more Dark Souls 2 to be able to make a definitive judgment. And I can't wait to play Bloodborne as soon as I'm done with Pillars of Eternity and Xenoblade Chronicles. So, in any case, you can check out our full review, which should be up right now over at US Gamer. Bob has been, like, breaking it down really in depth, so you should definitely go check out his extended thoughts on it. And Phil, Mike McWhirter is reviewing it for you guys over at Polygon.
Yeah,
it should be up for you guys, too, right?
I think it will be up by the time this goes up. Fingers crossed. If you're somebody who doesn't have a PS4 or isn't sure if they want to get into Bloodborne yet, you could check out over at youtube.com/polygon, myself and my coworker Danielle Riendo are doing a full Let's Play walkthrough of Bloodborne, so you can go check that out. And I think at the time this goes up, the first three or four parts should be live, which is mostly just going to be in the first area because I'm very bad at video games.
Man, Phil, that's really ambitious of you.
It was a great idea. Good work, Phil.
Oh, well, you can also check out Bob's stream of Bloodborne over on our YouTube channel, which is US Gamer Net. We're getting a lot more content going up as we speak. And, of course, check out our Twitch channel, which is also called US Gamer Net. It's called US Gamer Net, for heaven's sake. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on all of the social media channels. Phil, where else can we find you?
I'm at twitter.com/pkohler.
And Bob?
I'm Bob Servo on Twitter, and I also want to note that if you watch that video, you can see me fight a boss in, beat a boss in one attempt.
Well,
out of pure luck.
And if you're enjoying this podcast, there's also Retronauts and also From Us to You, which is our weekly or semi-weekly news analysis podcast, which are also both on iTunes. In any case, that has been our Bloodborne podcast. Now I get to actually go play it. It's very exciting. Special thanks to Phil Kohler for joining us. Thanks, as always, to Bob. Next week, I think that we're going to be talking about Xenoblade Chronicles, and I'm also working on getting some Pillars of Eternity content, so check out that as well. Until then, happy adventuring. Music for Acts of the Blood God provided by Leif Chappelle. Find more of his music at leifchappelle.com and the RPG Maker Music Pack at rpgmaker.net. For more great gaming content, follow us at usgamer.net.